You're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading, and with me today are some fabulous area writers. Julie Gard, who is an instructor at UW-Superior. Thanks for being with us, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
And Marie Zwickov, who is vice chair of the Lake Superior Writers Board of Directors. Did I say that right?
Yeah. I sometimes say I'm chair of vice.
Well, we'll get more to that in a minute. And on the phone with us is Julie Buckles. She's the author of Paddling to Winter and also works as the communications specialist at Northland College. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you, Danielle. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited for this show because I've just been wanting to do something about literature, books for a long time because it feels like I never get that opportunity. But with the holidays coming up, I feel like everybody's kind of getting their list together of what they're hoping to have time to read. So I guess I just want to start with you, Julie, on the phone. What are some of the books that you are hoping to get to this holiday season?
Well, first, I'm going to make a big plug for books as gifts. And I told my daughter this the other day. She said, oh, I'm just so afraid I'm going to give someone something they don't like. And we were at a bookstore. I said, with books, you can't go wrong. One, you're supporting a local bookstore. Two, you're supporting an author. And three, if the person really, really doesn't like it, they'll pass it on to someone else. I think books in print, I love them, and that's still how I read, and it's how my kids read. And there is just something about the paper and the texture and the great images on the front. So I'm a big fan of books, and I'm a big fan of giving books as gifts. And so with that, I'll tell you a few books I've read that are all in the larger region, Midwestern writers with Midwestern sensibilities. And the first is, from your part of the world, Lucy Amundson's wrote Locally Laid. And it's out this year, and it's so funny and smart and really educational. I've been interested in local food for 10 years, and I learned so much from the book just in how you revitalize a rural region. But I also laughed through the whole thing, and she's really fabulous.
Yeah, and one of the excerpts she read at Writers Read, right?
Yeah, and she, and that I don't even think was in the book, but she, yeah, you heard her last year. She is just very, very funny, and that comes through in this book. It's really her strong voice. And that last year at Writers Read was the first I had heard her or met her, and I've since become a big fan. So Locally Laid's my big one. And then another is another woman with a great sense of style in writing is Blair Braverman. And she's from northern Wisconsin, or now lives in northern Wisconsin, about three, really north of Green Bay. But I met her through the Apostle Islands sled dog race, and then afterwards found out she was writing a book, and it came out this year. And I don't know if we can say this one word on the air, but it's Welcome to the GD Ice Cube. And it's
thank you
her
for the editing.
Years in the great north of Alaska, of Scandinavia, and then finally northern Wisconsin. She's just really intense. She's in her 20s. She's done some hardcore trips. She's got a team of puppies now. She's training for the Iditarod. And I love this book. And it ended up on a lot of best lists this last summer. And so I'm really excited for her as well. And then the last is another one from your area, Felicia Schneiderhan, Newlyweds Afloat, which came out last year. But my mom just reminded me because I gave it to my parents, and they're loving it. There's so much in there that's so interesting, and it's kind of in the vein of Lucy's book, Locally Laid, just so much education about what it's like to live on a boat and how a boat works. And she and her husband were living in Chicago on a boat, and just what that's all about in that community. And if you want to learn more about just that lifestyle, along with a great sense of humor and kind of reality of what building a relationship while you're living in a small space is like. I'll leave it with those three for right now, and because I'm anxious to hear what the others have to say.
What about you, Julie, should I call you Julie G? And we'll call you Julie B?
Sounds
sure.
Good.
Okay. What about you, Julie G and Marie? Were any of those on your list?
I would second that Newlyweds Afloat is an awesome book. I Yep, had the privilege of doing some work with Felicia over the past year, doing a panel with her and with Lucy through Lake Superior Writers, and they're both wonderful people and wonderful writers. Both of their books are great. Good gifts.
Yeah, that book's on my list also.
You know, one of the things I was also wondering about, I mean, I haven't heard of Welcome to the GD North, but that also sounds like something that's
Ice Cube.
Right up. Yeah. Ice Cube? Okay.
Yeah, GD Ice Cube.
GD Ice Cube. Okay. I'm going to have to look for that next time I'm at Apostle Island's booksellers. But, you know, all of these seem to have this kind of like off color, you know, funny kind of feel to it. And is that kind of a trend that we're seeing with some of the area writers, that they're kind of making light of this area in an affectionate way, Marie?
I think so. I think memoir writing is getting bigger. And I think people are less afraid to be as politically correct. You know, they're okay having fun with titles and things like that.
As we've seen with Donald Trump, maybe it's a trend sweeping the nation.
We'll see.
But what was on your list, Marie?
Well, a lot of the books that I haven't read have already been mentioned, but some of the books that I have read, I took your question as remedies to holiday problems. Like, if you're bored during the holidays, you want some adventure. I really like a book called From Blueberries to Blue Seas. It's by Curtis Bush. And that's another boat one, although he used to be a blueberry farmer in northern Minnesota, sold his farm and bought a sailboat. And he sailed single-handedly from Duluth to the Atlantic Ocean. So it's a memoir about his experiences doing that. And also, if you are feeling like the holidays are just too materialistic, there's a book that will cure that. And it's called Emancipation of a Buried Man. And that's by Eddie Gilmore. And he's a writer in Duluth. And he was the son of a hoarder. His mother hoarded things. And just his descriptions of, like, materialism run amok will cure you of any tendencies you have that way.
Yeah, I think minimalism is kind of a big deal right now.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would just like to get rid of a lot more stuff so I don't have to worry about what I'm going to do with it later on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's so freeing to have less stuff. You know, it's amazing what you can really get along without.
And why do I recognize Eddie's name?
He writes for The Budgeteer.
Okay.
So he has a column there, and he's described some of his experiences in that. But, of course, his book has much more. And then also, if you feel like you've eaten too much during the holidays, there's a book called The Hungry Coast, and it's by Marlis Brand. And she's compiled a collection of short stories about the North Shore of Lake Superior. And this book actually won the Midwest Book Award for Fiction. And I want to warn people, though, the content is very stark. I mean, there's starvation, there's frigid temperatures, there's blindness. You know, it's not an easy read, but it will cure you of your feelings of having overeaten.
I'm not sure if anything could cure me of that. It's kind of a common occurrence right now, but I'll give it a shot. How about you, Julie? What are some of the favorites you have on your list?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm taking notes here, so I'm getting more ideas. Thank you to Marie and Julie for all these great suggestions. It occurred to me when we were talking about funny, edgy books about living up north that Cold Comfort by Bart Sutter, that was published about 18 years ago now, so it's sort of an oldie but goodie, is just a wonderful book on those sorts of themes. A series of short pieces he originally wrote, I believe, for NPR, so they were radio pieces to start with. And they're really funny and really great, so that's Cold Comfort. If you haven't read it for a while or have never read it and you live up north, I'd highly suggest that it's like an initiation or something.
I love Bart Sutter. He was my poetry professor when I was here at UW Superior before he retired.
Yeah, and he has some wonderful more recent books too. And then another writer in the area, a local yet international writer in terms of the quality of her work, is Linda Lagarde Grover. And I have her book of poems, The Sky Watched, that just came out this fall, and I haven't had a chance to read them yet, so I'm very excited about that. And of course, her story collection, The Dance Boots, or her novel, The Road Back to Sweetgrass, you can't go wrong with those either as gifts or to read yourself.
Well, and I also want to include some of the picks that our listeners have. We put out a little post on Facebook to see, you know, what some people are going to be putting on their nightstand for the holidays. And one of them was The Jesus Cow by Michael Perry. And he's done a lot of stuff for Big Top Chautauqua up in Bayfield and lives in western Wisconsin in my hometown of Fall Creek. And that was Rich Kramer that put that out. Shout out to the Eau Claire Bureau. But also Ron Brochu said that he's going to be looking at True North by Jim Harrison, which I actually don't know anything about. I've never read it, but it's supposed to be a great regional tale. Any other books, either local or just national bestsellers, that you guys are really hoping to dig into, Marie or Julie?
I have some recommendations for children's reading. There's a couple new ones out there. One is called My Puppy Gave to Me, and it's done to the tune of The 12 Days of Christmas, and it's by Cheryl Dannenbring, and it's really cute. It's, you know, like my puppy. On the first day of Christmas, my puppy brought to me a sock with holes in it. I mean, hers rhymes. I mean, that's just an example. But that's really cute. And then another neat new book for kids is called The New Folklore by Teague Alexi. And he's another, you might recognize his name from The Budgeteer also. But his folklore stories have like castles and jesters and women who live in caves, which I really identify with. But that's another really good one for kids.
Well, and I just want to pause for a second because I know I heard Julie Buckles talking in the background, but I'm sorry, Julie, I had your mic down. What were some of the things that you were going to add to that list?
Oh, thank you, Danielle. Well, I do have a few more. I know people love to escape to the Bahamas when they're reading in the winter, but I am on the other side of that, and I love to burrow deeper into winter. And so another pick, I've already read it, but I would recommend it, is Wintering by Peter Guy. It's a follow-up to Lighthouse Road, so it's really the second in a series about the North Shore. It's historical, and it's a pretty fabulous tale that he tells with that. And he's from Minnesota, and he has participated in Writers Read, our event over here in January, and is just a really great friend of writers. And so I'm always really happy when I can help plug him as well. But as far as national writers, Caroline Paul has become a new favorite author of mine. She put out a book this year called The Gutsy Girl, and that's a good young adult and even younger book, and it's also good for adults. But it's really about gutsy women in history, and it's lots of really fun illustrations and fun stories about women who have done extraordinary things and are still doing extraordinary things. But a really fun one that I read, we went canoeing this summer on the Flambeau River, and it's always a big struggle to find the perfect book to read aloud as a family. And I brought along, just because I just grabbed it off the shelf and we hadn't read it yet, a book called The Lost Cat, and that's also by Caroline Paul. And it is so funny, and it's all about her cat goes missing, and it's about her search for the cat. And again, great illustrations by her partner, Wendy McNaughton, who's a really brilliant illustrator. So if you really want like a fun, light book and you want a family book that you can read aloud and the adults will enjoy as much as the kids, but we just really laughed over that one. And then three others I'm going to just give quick mentions to. They're on bestseller lists. They're on all the best lists, but I'm really looking forward to them. It's Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run. It's his memoir, and it's I've heard of interviewed, and it's on a lot of top picks for the year. So I'm looking forward to that one. And then a very modern, middle-aged woman book is Today Will Be Different by Maria Semple. And she's a TV writer, and she was on Terry Gross's Fresh Air the other night and read from her book. And it sounds like a lot of fun, and it's really about modern life and about how we are all trying to just focus and be in the present, but it is so darn hard. The last one is just A Man Called Ove, which I'm reading right now, and it's just about a cranky old man, and it's from his perspective, and so we learn it's, you know, and the great thing about literature and is that we learn compassion and empathy, and we get a greater understanding of why he's so cranky and how a little bit of kindness turns that around. So it's kind of a sweet holiday tale.
Well, and Julie G., what about you? Do you have more local or more national picks on your list?
Sure. I have a couple of national or international ones here I could talk about. One is Snow by the Turkish writer Orhan Pamuk. And it's just a magical book. It's wonderful to read in the winter, especially if it's snowing outside, because it's snowing for pretty much the entire book. And so you just feel like you're in this snow globe in the book, and your house, if you have that snow coming down outside the windows. And it's set in a town in Turkey during this three-day snowstorm. And it's a very serious book, dealing with themes of extremism, you know, religious extremism, and spying and romance. And it's just very painful at times, but very beautiful, and just like this constant theme of like calm because of the storm and suspension of time at the same time as it's very suspenseful and urgent. So Snow, wonderful book.
I just have to quickly interject a television series that your book pick reminds me of. I don't know if any of you have watched Fortitude, but it's a wonderful, like, if you're looking to Netflix and chill, I really loved that series. I think it was from the BBC, and it was all about this one town. It had a lot of drama woven in with the town and great characters, and that your story Snow, or the book Snow, reminded me of that. So, I'm sorry.
Oh,
rest
great.
Of your list.
No, I just wrote that down. I love BBC stuff. So, something else that came to mind, especially for reading right around the holidays, is an essay by Terry Castle in her book, The Professor and Other Writings, called My Heroine Christmas. She doesn't use heroin in the story. She's mostly like eating chocolate throughout the entire book, but it's just a wonderful book. It's so funny and wry and dark humor. You have to like dark, sort of semi-sick at times humor. But yeah, My Heroine Christmas. It's about jazz musician Art Pepper, and she's at her parents' house in California, Southern California, visiting them. So it's not a winter scene, but it's definitely a Christmas with family who you may not have a lot in common with at this point kind of thing, and it's hilarious. So Terry Castle, good reading. And then this is on a more serious note, but just given the various events going on in our wider political and you know, cultural and social scene at this time, I've been reading more James Baldwin, who's good to read anytime, but just recently finished his book, The Fire Next Time, and just want to keep reading him. You know, he's a good person to read right now. And plus, his language is beautiful, as well as, you know, he's very bold in what he has to say in his fiction or nonfiction. So.
Okay. Well, I wanted to add a couple, too, that I had heard about. One was from an area writer, Kathy Lang, which is a series of essays that she collected from a bunch of people living in the Shawangan Bay area. It's photo essays. She interviewed people living in the area, and it's called Why This Place, the Shawangan Bay and Beyond Through the Eyes and Hearts of People Who Live Here. I believe that's coming out soon. And Julie, there was one other that Claire Duquette, yep, who couldn't join us, had mentioned. Can you fill me in on that?
Yeah, and the one by Catherine Lang, I wrote the afterword for it, and it is available in all the local bookstores, and I think probably on Amazon. I'm not really sure, but I actually have that book right in front of me, and it's really a pretty book, and her photography is really beautiful. So I know that's actually, the sales are doing really well over here, so it's a book people seem to be responding to. End of the Lupine Season by Laurie Otis. And Laurie Otis, I can pretty much say without hesitation, is the queen of Bayfield County. We all love her and adore her, and she is so active in the community. She's a writer. She's worked in theater. She's in her 80s, but she is just so, so fabulous and a really wonderful writer. And End of the Lupine Season takes place on Madeline Island. It's fiction. It also has a beautiful cover, and I think probably available through Amazon and then also at local bookstores here.
Okay. And Christopher LaForge on Facebook suggests Half Earth by E.O. Wilson. He says it's a compelling narrative on how to slow the sixth great extinction, which we are in right now, on how to preserve biodiversity for future generations that was published this year. You know, the one book that I read this year, which wasn't really new to anybody else but me because I live in a hidey hole, but I read The Girl on the Train and just absolutely loved that book just because it was a really relatable main character who was a drunk. Not that I'm saying that I'm a drunk, but, you know, it's just that you to see the weakness in characters and go through that process with them of, is this my fault? What happened? How can I fix this? And not really knowing the line sometimes of when you should step back from a situation or when you shouldn't, you know. So I really love that book. And I also just picked up the other night, and I don't know if it's new or not, but it was a Stephen King book, and I think it was The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, which is a compilation of his short stories, which I always love Stephen King. So any other picks that you guys have on your list? How about you, Julie B.?
I am actually planning to reread some of the Harry Potter. I think also because of the political climate, J.K. Rowling was writing those as after we went through 9/11, and you know, I know everyone does not feel that way, but I have been having that same feeling the last month, and so it's like I kind of just want to go there again, and I just love Harry Potter, and my daughter loves Harry Potter, and it's something that we can talk about. So, and also, I don't know if people know this, but at least last year they started to release each of the books at the end of each year that are beautifully illustrated. So they released the first one last year, which I got for my daughter because she just collects all the Harry Potter books. And it's a really gorgeous addition to if you have someone that you're buying for that if they're into Harry Potter and it's like, what else do you get that person that's Harry Potter related? These books that they're putting out one a year are just really gorgeous books.
Well, and I feel like I should shift because I haven't asked any of you if you're working on anything lately. So Julie on the phone, anything that you're working on, whether it's short or long form?
Actually, lots of things going on, but mostly working in short form. I'm doing a piece for Lake Superior Magazine right now on the storms of last summer and all of the Coast Guard rescues, which Connie LeMay thought was up my alley, and my deadline on that is pretty soon, so I better get working harder on it. And then also just working on some shorter essays, and then always have plans for longer works that I'm plugging along on.
Well, I'll be looking forward to your storm coverage. That'll be interesting, you know, taking...
Yeah, I mean, what a fun story to get to work on, and definitely was an intense summer last summer, so
yeah,
it should be good.
Well, what about you, Marie? Any projects that you're working on right now?
Well, I'm working on an anthology of Lake Superior short stories, and it's through Lake Superior Writers. We had a contest last year called Going Coastal. We solicited short stories about Lake Superior, and we had 9 local writers from northern Wisconsin and northeastern Minnesota that won the contest, and we found a publisher for them, North Star Press out of St. Cloud. Good. And it's the book's going to be called Going Coastal, and it's going to come out in May. And I just got the cover. You poor listeners can't see it, but I'm really super excited because we got a picture from Christian Dahlbeck. He's out of Two Harbors, and he gets into the lake to take his pictures. He wears a dry suit and has a special camera and everything. And it's a picture of Split Rock Lighthouse, and it looks like a wave's coming over it. It's just so cool. I think a lot of people will just buy it for the cover. But some of the writers featured are Eric Chandler, Phil Fitzpatrick, Evan Sassman. He's in Ashland. Judy Bedreau from Duluth, Teresa Allison Price, Jonna Sukkonen, she's out in Oregon, but she used to be in Ely, Max Reagan, he's a UMD student, James Bakken, he's down in Cable. So it's a whole mix of experiences and age ranges of the writers, and that's going to be really cool.
Julie G, anything that you're working on lately? I know that you've had some poetry and prose that you've published, or you're always publishing, it seems like, and reading in the area. What are you working on?
Well, let's see. I published my first full-length book last year, a prose poetry collection called Home Studies, and so now I'm kind of in that mode, like, okay, did that second book, right? Got to work on that. So, yeah, I'm always writing, and, you know, it's like, is this a prose poem? Is it not? I don't know. I just churn stuff out and then kind of look back and see. So right now I'm just kind of at a formative stage with a book manuscript. Part of that I call soundscapes, where I love to write off of found objects, and I've done that for years, and visual artwork, and I've become interested in working off of like found sound, including found speech. Some people would just call it eavesdropping or spying on people, but really, don't be paranoid, anyone.
I get paid to do that.
Oh, there you go. Good. Okay, I'm not alone here. So I've been doing some in coffee shops or on public transportation, you know, just in town. Or my partner and I did some traveling this summer in England and Ireland and Scotland, and just on trains and subways, stations, wherever, and just putting this found language, you know, into poetry. I've been working on that, and then lately, and this may be part of the book or not, we'll see, but I found that since we got our new puppy, who's almost a year old, so then I'll have to stop calling him a puppy in like 3 more days, actually. It's 1 year birthday. He is still, you know, he requires a lot of attention. It's a lot of activity around the house, and, you know, bones and toys flying pretty much all the time. And so I find that I really have to write before I get out of bed, or else it's too chaotic. So I've taken to, you know, the alarm goes off and I just write on, like, I text on my phone and write something for like 20 minutes, and maybe it's a prose poem, maybe not. And then I get up and, you know, feed the dog and run around and stuff like that. So these little pieces written before, you know, getting out of bed in the morning, I think they might be something, and we'll see. I'll keep you posted.
It seems like that's almost the best time to write. And I'm just kind of curious what your guys' method or your ladies' methods are. I'm not really a writer unless you count reporting.
That counts.
It does.
Definitely.
It's storytelling. Hard to sit down when you have an idea. I think, like, I feel sometimes like I have this idea for fiction that I'd love to, like, I get all excited in my head, and then when I sit down and want to write it out, then I'm just like, all the energy leaves me. So how do you guys stay motivated? How do you get the words on paper? Julie Buckles, you first.
Well, I was trained as you are trained, Daniel, which I need deadlines. And so sometimes they have to be self-imposed. But I also think I agree with you. I think it's really tough when it's a project of love and you have the idea, you have the, you know, you have the skills, you have the willpower, but you sit down and the computer sometimes is just an energy suck because you work on the computer, you're on it all day. Mm-hmm. So I find a journal is a better way to go for when you want to just get those ideas down. Or I love this idea of just texting yourself in the morning, just taking the moment and what you have and moving it forward, because then at some point you will want to sit down at the computer and start to put it down, but you've got your jewels in a journal form. Or I just find writing on paper to be so enjoyable and so part of the creative process. And sometimes they turn into sketches, and sometimes they don't. But I'm like you. I sit down at a computer at night to do something that's more creative than what I do at work, and I just don't want to do it because I don't want to sit at the computer anymore.
Right, because it feels like work again.
Yeah.
Instead of the fun part that you were having before.
Yeah.
So, but Marie, what about you?
Well, Danny, I was thinking about you. Maybe you should speak it out. You know, get a digital recorder and say what you're thinking of. And that just might be an easier way to get it out, especially for you, you know, radio.
Yeah, I'd have to edit out all the swear words. But that's an idea.
That's good. I'm also a journalist by training. And during the day, my job is a science writer. So I'm using that logical part of my brain. And I'm trying to tell stories about science. And sometimes it's hard to turn that off when I want to write something more creative, you know, I write fiction and poetry in the evenings. And so I find what I need to do is I just need to slow down the logical part of my brain. And I do that just by trying to relax or listening to classical music, drinking a glass of wine. That helps sometimes, as long as you don't drink too much.
I think that's my favorite idea yet.
But that kind of slows down all the noise of, you know, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, and gets more of the creative juices flowing. So that's my secret.
Okay. And Julie Gard?
Well, sometimes it's fun to just give you advice here. This should just be like a reverse advice
writing therapy
show format. Right. You know,
call in with your
advice. I love the sort of reverse psychology of saying, I'm going to write something horrible. I know it works for my students. Like, write down the three worst titles you can think of for your essay. And then they all, like, then I get this whole round of essays with, like, brilliant titles, you know, like, just freeing yourself up. So just write the worst draft you can of something. Just write it down. It's going to be crap or whatever other expletive you want to put in there. And then, as people are saying like that, then you can return to it later. And I think that's when so much of the shaping can happen, that it almost doesn't matter if your first draft isn't what you want at all, or it doesn't feel, you know, great or literary as you're writing it. But if you can just make yourself, you know, butt in chair, write down what you're thinking as horribly as you possibly can, and then you can come back to it later. And
I can definitely do that.
Eventually it'll be brilliant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, butt glue. That's another secret. Yeah. Sitting in the chair.
Well, I really appreciate all of you ladies taking the time to talk about your favorite picks for the holiday season and some of the new things that are coming up or being worked on. I'm out of time, but I would love to have you back on the show to talk about stuff that's going on in the new year. Thanks again to Julie Gard with UW Superior and local poet, Home Studies. That was your most recent book?
Yes.
Okay. And Marie Zwickov, chair of Vice and vice chair of the Lake Superior Writers Board of Directors. Also works for Minnesota Sea Grant.
Wisconsin Sea Grant. Oh, used to be
you
Minnesota.
Jumped across the bridge.
I did.
And Julie Buckles, author of Paddling to Winter and communication specialist at Northland College in Ashland. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Danielle. This was a blast.
Yeah, we got to do it again sometime.
Yep.
Well, you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around, there's more to come. I'm Danielle Kading, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Danielle Kading, and glad to have you with us. You're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Last week, the University of Wisconsin System Board of Regents approved a $78 million proposal to provide 2% raises to all UW employees. The proposal will go before lawmakers for their approval next year. This week, I sat down with UW Superior Faculty Senate Chair Brent Knoppbaum and UWS Chancellor Renee Wachter about the Regents meeting last week, the proposed pay raises, and wage increases for five UW chancellors. Up first is Brent Knoppbaum on the proposal to increase employee wages.
2% for two consecutive years for all UW system employees, if it goes through, still leaves a whole lot of people on our campus at UW Superior and throughout UW system who are actually making less money take-home pay now than they did prior to Scott Walker becoming the governor of Wisconsin and passing Act 10. So I'm not going to say it's bad. It's good, right? I mean, it's a pay increase. It's pretty nominal. Obviously, I would wish for more, and I think the people I represent and my fellow employees here at UW System would wish for more. But like I said, at least it's a recognition that that the employees of UW System and UW Superior are in desperate need of some pay increases.
And I read that this would not come out of reserves, that this would be state funding that would go to support this. And given the climate in the state legislature, the Republican-controlled legislature, do you think it has a chance of being approved?
I think there is some recognition on both sides of the aisle in Madison that UW system has taken its share of the burden of our state financial issues, if not more so. and that it's time for some recognition to be made for the great work that's being done at UW-Superior and UW-System. So I am cautiously optimistic that it will pass. It's hard to judge these. There seems to be some real misconceptions about what UW-Superior or UW-System does. And my hope is that there will be a positive recognition that this is a necessary step.
So kind of related to that, do you know anything about the discussions they had related to tenure?
I do. Several campuses, I couldn't name them all. I think it's UW-Milwaukee, UW-Eau Claire, and several others had their post-tenure review, their revised post-tenure review policies up for a vote. And my understanding is that they all passed. We are at UW-Superior working on our own post-tenure review policy. We hope to forward that to UW-System in time for their February Board of Regents meeting. It was a little complicated at UW-Superior. We had originally passed a proposal for which we had received the endorsement of our administration and the UW-System legal. But there's been kind of a kerfuffle over the last maybe 6 weeks at the system level and at the Board of Regents level. A lot of it's about what kind of review processes should be in place or part of this post-tenure review package. I think that's mostly been cleared up, as the passing of several policies seems to illustrate. But it was a little frustrating for us at UWS because we felt like we'd really done our work, put forward a really strong policy, only to find out sort of at the last minute that it wasn't good enough. So we decided to wait and see what happens with these other policies before we move forward. So again, I'm confident that in the end we'll have a strong post-tenure review policy that meets the changes at the tenure level that were passed last spring at the Board of Regents. I guess I got to say that the confusion that ensues does illustrate in my mind, you know, what happens when you see changes being made to longstanding policies that don't illustrate that they have issues. And when there's sort of kind of political meddling that takes place in those, confusion ensues. And I think this is yet another example of that. So I'm hopeful that this will be something we can move on from positively. There still is a second component that we'll have to look at in the spring, which has to do with layoff changes. And my hope is that the system leadership and the Board of Regents will see kind of what went right and what went wrong with this last series of policy changes. And hopefully it'll be a little easier to accomplish in the spring semester, if that's indeed when it happens. You know, if that's used in a productive way to improve the quality of work by faculty, then I don't see this as being a real contentious thing. But there is a fear factor and that a lot of folks have about these kinds of policies. If they were utilized by chancellors or administrators that maybe didn't value tenure, and I'm not saying ours does that at all, our chancellor is very much someone who values tenure, but in certain hands, could this be contentious? Could this be a challenge for faculty? Absolutely.
Well, I want to go back to the pay issue. Correct me if I'm wrong, it's been several years since faculty or staff have seen pay increases, at least here at UWS, right?
I think it was the last biennium we received 1% increases. So it's been a couple of years, but that was mostly for faculty. Quite honestly, faculty have had a couple of opportunities. There was a little bit of compression money for some folks last year. But it was pretty limited. And of course, you know, with faculty in particular, if a faculty member is promoted or receives tenure, they do see a pay increase. I think it's the staff, quite honestly, at this university that have seen the least amount of increase over the last, you know, 6 or 7 or 10 years. I'm glad to hear that this 2%, at least in its intent, was an across-the-board increase for all employees, and I hope that that stands. That, to me, is a really important thing, that it's not just for faculty, but it's for all full-time employees.
Do you feel like that will make a difference as far as being able to keep quality employees here at UWS or across UW system?
Absolutely. It will help, right? I mean, we've seen a fair amount of people move elsewhere, right? There's been an exodus throughout the UW system schools. And that's in large part because people get paid more elsewhere. That's not the only reason, right? It's been a tough few years. A lot of folks, morale is low still. People feel that that they're not appreciated by the state that they work very hard for. But this is at least a step in the right direction.
There are six five or six chancellors within UW system that are set to see 3.5% to 6% increases under a proposal approved by the regents last week. And Chancellor Renee Wachter would receive the largest increase of any of those chancellors. She would receive a 6% increase in her pay. And you spoke about morale. What do you think the perception is on campus when most people are talking about 2% raises, if at all, and then they see the top administrator approve for a 6% increase?
Well, in terms of morale, I think that there will be folks that don't look too kindly on that that pay increase for the chancellor or chancellors. I think if you look at national averages, chancellors in UW system make less than those averages, just like faculty do, and for that matter, most staff. So I'm not a person who really thinks that we should get into the us versus them, administration versus faculty and staff, and that kind of mentality. I think that we've worked very hard on this campus to move past that in recent years. That said, I do think that there will be folks on campus who will think that is very negative, especially in light of the fact that we're not sure what's going to happen with our 2%. My hope is this, and my fear is this, right, is that when the legislature, who's seemingly value of UW schools is to empower chancellors as some kind of CEOs, as opposed to recognizing that universities are really about all the people that work there, I say nothing for the students that go to school there. If we get into a bidding war, or if they get into some kind of bidding war at the legislator level that says, well, we'll give the chancellors their raise, but the employees will cut that to 1% or something, I hope that doesn't happen, because that's where it would really erode morale at our campus and other campuses.
Again, you were just listening to Brent Knoppbaum, Faculty Senate Chair at UW-Superior. Up next is an interview with UWS Chancellor Renee Wachter. She offered her thoughts on the proposed raises and spoke about what the university's budget looks like at this point in time.
There are still structural issues that we're working to address. There are things that take years really to accomplish, but you work at them each year and make progress, and we've done a lot of that, a lot of heavy lifting over the last few years, and now we've really been focused on the flip side of the equation, which is really growing the university, both through enrollments and through the addition of new programs. So the online business degree that that you can complete your associate's to a bachelor's degree, some of the programs that will be kicking off in January with new classes, the intensive programs in graduate education are just some of the examples, and there's other things percolating as well. So we've been really focusing on the innovation side of the equation.
With a lot of the projects that came through from the Superior Innovation Initiative?
Yes, so we've got a number of programs that have passed our internal processes and are in the process of developing marketing plans for that we'll be launching, we're hoping, in the fall semester, plus the ideas that have came forward and the new programs that have launched both in the fall and will be happening this spring.
I'm just a little curious, too, because I know UW-Superior got some good news this fall when they heard that what was left over from the benzene spill trust was going to be split between UW-Superior, WITC, and the Duluth-Superior Community Foundation. And I'm just wondering if any of that money will also be used to help with the school's budget deficit, or if that's going to be more reserved for students and programming.
At this point, we've talked more about it being reserved for students and programming. We think that that's where the important investment needs to be, both in terms of supporting the students that come here, but also in supporting their success. So that's where we're looking at directing it right now.
What is the actual deficit of UW-Superior at this point in time?
It's a little bit of a difficult question to ask, only in the sense that the budget numbers change and will change depending on what happens with enrollment in the coming spring. So for me to give you a precise number wouldn't be very helpful.
As far as assistance that UW-Superior has received too from UW system, I know that there was this one-time gift of money to help with the budget struggles that UW-Superior was facing, and that's set to expire at the end of this academic year. Have you had conversations with UW system or President Ray Cross about what's going to be happening moving forward, depending on what we see with the next budget year?
I will tell you that UW system and President Cross and his team have been very supportive of the campus and have indicated that they'll continue to be supportive. A lot, of course, always depends on what that next phase looks like, what happens with the biennial budget, and right now nobody really knows. We'd like to be optimistic and hope for the best, but we won't know, obviously, for several months.
You know, the big discussion as of the Board of Regents decisions last week was the decisions that they made regarding pay increases for employees that they're suggesting the lawmakers, that 2% increase, because employees have been operating, I think it was in the last 5 years, it's only been a 1% increase in one budget biennium. So how important do you feel those increases are, at least for faculty and staff here at UWS?
It's enormously important. I think if you look at what's happened both several biennium ago when employees were forced to take furloughs, when you look at the cost of contributions for health insurance and medical care, combined with what's happening with the CPI, our employees are falling further and further behind. And indeed, I think it's been mentioned before that they are looking across the border at other states and looking at what's happening with regular compensation increases there. It's very frustrating and very challenging. I think we owe it to our employees that are really taking care of the future of the state of Wisconsin through our children and kids that we need to be supporting them. We work and have been working very hard to try to make sure that our employees feel valued. Everybody can always do a better job of that, but we're very conscientious of trying to make it the best possible place to work and trying to do things like create flexible work policies and job sharing and some things like that, looking at are there other incentives that we can offer if we can't offer the compensation to try to make it the best place to be. But again, in the end, sometimes it's sheerly an economic decision because somebody does. They've got a kid on the way, they've got a young family, and they're the sole provider, and they have to make a tough decision.
Well, and just kind of taking a look at the increases that were suggested, I think it's a $78 million proposal that's going to go before lawmakers next year. Do you think that that 2% increase for all UW employees is enough? I think this is a question I asked Dan and Brent the other day, and I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
I think it's, I mean, we've benchmarked sort of what's been happening over the years and that, you know, our employees are falling further and further behind. I would, you know, in an ideal world, I would say, no, it's not enough. It's certainly a step in the right direction. We need to keep making those steps to ensure that we are keeping the best and the brightest that are serving our students here within the state of Wisconsin.
One of the pay increases that UW Regents did approve was increase in your salary, along with four other chancellors at UW system. The system spokeswoman, Stephanie Marquis, said that this is to keep them in line with your peers across the country and to that you're also the longest serving chancellors in the system. And you were the one that received the largest increase of the five. And so I'm just wondering how that feels when you're on a campus and there, you know, you've done the climate survey and we know that there's some negative feelings at times. Do you feel like that's going to cause bad feelings among some people on campus that you're getting a 6% increase while they're hoping for their 2%?
I would say that, you know, of course we're grateful for the consideration that system is concerned about equity as much as we're concerned about the equity of our employees and really working strategically and very vocally to say that we're supportive of the compensation increases that are on the table right now.
How would you look at that if you were an employee and the top administrator got a raise when you haven't seen one or you've seen one in the last 5 years?
In truth, I would be extremely frustrated. And I completely empathize with the frustration that people feel, not just on our campus, but on any of the campuses, because they've been asked for years now to do more with less. And I think it just serves to underscore why this compensation package that's being put forward is so important. It's affecting people's lives. It's affecting people's sense of feeling valued.
The UW system spokeswoman, Stephanie Marquis, said it was to keep you on par the raises that the chancellors received to keep you on par with your peers across the country. That said, is it hard to continue working here at UW-Superior? Do you feel enticed to take jobs elsewhere because of the difference between what you receive in Wisconsin and what your peers receive across the country?
For myself, I can't, you know, I can't obviously speak for chancellors at other campuses, but I've invested a lot of myself into this campus. So no, I in particular wouldn't be attracted solely on the basis of money.
You're getting very emotional in your response. Why is this campus so important to you? Why has the last few years meant so much to you that you wouldn't leave?
I do get emotional about it. I think because I see how hard the people work on this campus and how dedicated they are to the community, to the students that they work with. And so to see little movement where people sometimes are really struggling to make ends meet and choose to work here anyway is a tough situation. And yeah, I feel invested.
Again, you were just listening to UWS Chancellor Renee Wachter about UW-Superior's budget and proposed pay increases for UW employees and chancellors. That's it for our program. You can hear extended interviews with the faculty senate chair and chancellor at UWS on our website at wpr.org/superior. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. Stay warm.